Then there was Nazareth. That would be sort of a logical favorite because it was the home of Mary and Joseph. And it offered the most convenience. Life could go on as usual for Mary and Joseph. The baby could be born. They have family and friends and all the support, the good neighbors. No interruption in the daily flow of life and all of that. But Nazareth didn't make the cut either. So why Bethlehem? By the ancient prophet's own words, Bethlehem was small among the clans of Judah. So of the 12 tribes, Judah was one of the 12 tribes of Israel, and each tribe had its clans, its family names, and of all of them, Bethlehem was the smallest of the smallest of the smallest. It never rose to a position of prominence in its entire history. And two events stand out in history, though. It was here that David was born and grew up, okay? That's why it's called the City of David. That's where David was born. And it's also the place where, if you read in the Old Testament, the story of Naomi and Ruth and Boaz in the book of Ruth, that all took place here. So there's only two things that really make it stand out. And for the most part, people came to Bethlehem and passed right through it. It was one of those little podunk towns where, you know, if you blinked, you missed it, you know, and it didn't have any destiny. In fact, now, I'm going to share this again tomorrow probably. When the songwriter wrote "O Little Town of Bethlehem," he had visited Bethlehem 150 years ago. That's how old the hymn was. And they, you know, people have been journeying and pilgrimaging to the Holy Land almost since the birth of Christ, you know. And he had pilgrimaged there and went to Bethlehem and, you know, traveled out of Jerusalem and went the 8 miles down the road to Bethlehem, and it was nothing. And so he wrote, "O little town of Bethlehem, how still we see thee lie. Above the deep and dreamless sleep, the silent stars go by. And yet the dark streets shineth the everlasting light. The hope and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight." Bethlehem with nothing, just this little tiny town. But Bethlehem's beginnings date back to dim past history. And when he wrote "deep and dreamless sleep," that's not a bad description of this little hamlet that had existed for 2,000 years. And it had been there that long. That little town had been there for 2,000 years before the shepherds came and before the stars and, the star led the magi to, you know, all of that. It had been there. Nothing had ever happened. Why Bethlehem? I want to present perhaps a different picture. Bethlehem is a Hebrew word, and it literally means house of bread. And I think that's significant. That has some significance to it. I think, you know, Christ was born at Bethlehem, the house of bread. Bread is probably the most common food item in existence, and, you know, he wanted to relate to the common man. He was not born in the house of royalty. He was not born in the house of riches. He was not born in the house of celebrity. He wasn't born in Jerusalem or Rome or Athens or Alexandria. He wasn't even born in a house. You know, he was born in a barn. Remember those times you left the door open, your mom said, "Were you born in the barn?" "No, but Jesus was." You say that, you're going to get hit, I can tell you. But he wasn't born in any place that was political or commercial or cultural or educational or socially significant of its day. Nothing. But the Old Testament prophet, hundreds of years before Jesus was born, had said, "But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come the one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times." Bethlehem, the house of bread. And bread is one of those most common things. And God wanted his son available to everybody, as available as bread. His birth was announced to shepherds, I would say common man. Those were the bottom of the social standing, you know, just a step above homeless. And, you know, he wasn't announced to King Herod. His cradle was a manger, a feeding trough in a barn. You didn't have to be rich to know Jesus. You don't have to, you know, he was there, and it was this whole idea of it just being so common and so down to earth and so, you know, so the outcast of society in his birth, that we forget that. That's who he came for, the lowest of the low. You don't have to be well-known or popular to know him. You just have to be you. He didn't want you to be anybody else. He just wants you to be you. He didn't come for the religious. He didn't come for those who thought they were right or those who thought they were all right. He came for the one who was aware of their needs. The house of bread. Interesting. Also, Jesus was born in Bethlehem to satisfy our spiritual hunger. You know what he said? When you think of Bethlehem being the house of bread, suddenly Jesus saying, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and who believes in me will never be thirsty. That dealing with our spiritual hunger for life and for forgiveness and grace and all of that, that he's the one who satisfies and gratifies and strengthens us spiritually just as bread does physically. You know? A lot of people are eating at the wrong table. Even Isaiah in Isaiah 55:2 says, why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what is does not satisfy? Listen to me and eat what is good and your soul will delight in the richest of fare. Eat what is good. It's easy to get caught up searching for the meaning of life in the wrong things because there are a lot of things that bring temporary happiness. And you get caught up in it. Everybody has something they're seeking after and something they're trying to satisfy a need that only God can satisfy. And everybody's trying to satisfy that need with something. When Jesus provides the only thing that meets that need, both in this life and the next. Christ is all the soul of man needs for spiritual satisfaction. And that's why I think he was born in the house of bread. And it gives us confidence. The need is going to be one of us. He is just one of us. And he came to love us. And he wanted to choose us to be his children, no matter how insignificant we may think we are, or we may seem to ourselves or to the world around us. We may seem to be invisible. You know. You ever watch that movie? We just watched it again. Deck the Halls. You know which one I'm talking about? Danny DeVito, Matthew Broderick. Yeah, just watched it last night, you know. Danny DeVito gets caught up in this whole thing of trying to find meaning in his life and something significant to be part of, you know, overlooking his family, and finally figures out that it's putting lights on his house so it can be seen from space. And he just goes crazy. You know, and you have this big battle between him and his neighbor that goes on to the whole movie as that all develops. And there's one point where, you know, he wins this race against his neighbor and all of this. And the neighbor, right in front of the whole town, says, but your house still can't be seen from space. How does it feel to be invisible? I watched the movie for that line. That's where most people live. Right there, feeling invisible in the greater consequence of things in life. You know, and that movie, you know, the more I watch it, the more I realize that, you know, here they're writing this great Christmas comedy. It's absolutely wonderful, you know, and yet at the same time, most people, Danny DeVito, trying to find significance in our life in something that is totally, in the long term, pretty ridiculous. When Jesus came as the bread of life, to give us significance. And I think that he was also born in the city of Bethlehem to show us that, you know, we have to choose him. He chose to come and to love us in his birth, his life, his death, his resurrection, in the events of history that took place around him. But if you're hungry, and I eat, does that satisfy your hunger? No, it doesn't. You know, just makes you hungrier. You got it. Jesus said, He who comes to me, we have to go to him, you know. How many of you get coupons in the mail every stinking day of your life, right? And Tim has got us, you know, and I've done it a couple times. He you know, says, "Daddy, look at this. There's an app called Groupon." How many of you have heard of Groupon? And they have these great deals, and they are wonderful deals. And they have this whole thing on all these restaurants, and they're wonderful deals, and you can save all this money. I mean, it's wonderful, except for one thing. You got to go to the restaurant, right? You got to go to the restaurant. That's the way it is. You have to go to the place. And Jesus invited all of us to come to him to receive rest, receive salvation, forgiveness, and hope, and love, and strength, and all of those other things. It's an open invitation, but it's still an invitation. It always reminds me of the guy that said, "Hey, I joined the gym. I haven't lost any weight like they promised. I guess I'll actually have to go to the gym and work out." You know, joining the gym doesn't do it. You have to go. You have to do it. You have to show up. You have to show up. So you have to show up for life, don't we? You have to show up to school. You have to show up to work. And believe me, if you're married, you better show up. Right? You have parents, you have kids, you better show up for your kids. You know? Life is about showing up. Getting up, cleaning up, dressing up, showing up. When Jesus came to give us life, to proclaim himself the bread of life, he didn't email everybody bread. What he sent was an invitation. And that invitation comes in a lot of ways. We just don't want to miss it. Don't want to miss that invitation. And sometimes we do. I have missed a few invitations. Because most of my kids are technologically light years ahead of me. And there have been several e-vites sent out for events. I wouldn't know one if I saw it. I wouldn't recognize it on my computer. I wouldn't even, that's an invitation to something. You know, I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy. Call me, send me a letter, send me something, a hard copy. I look at it, hold it in my hand. I may go to that. You know, you send me an e-vite, I'm probably not going to miss me, you know. I'm trying to be more aware, but invitations come in all kinds of forms, you know, all kinds of forms. And they can be casual. They can be casual. I gave a casual invitation today, Mr. Gibson from the band. He texted me and said, "Merry Christmas." And I texted him back and said, "Merry Christmas." I said, "Are you at home? Or are you back in Wisconsin?" And his text was, "I just shoveled snow for the second time today. Guess you're not here." You know. So when you get back, let's get together for dinner. You know, casual invitation. But I've also received formal invitations to weddings, former things. They come in all kinds of ways. And when Jesus gives us the invitation to come, it comes to each of us a little differently. It's always interesting to find out how people came to the Lord. You know, some were born in a Christian home and it's just sort of automatic. You know, I wasn't. I went to church because of a girl when I was 15. There was a girl I liked at school. She was a singer. I didn't know that. You know, it's one of those things where you like the person but you really don't talk. You know, and she said, "Well, I can't really, you know, I can't date. I couldn't date either." But she said, "I'm singing at church on Sunday." And I said, "Oh, okay. What time?" "Well, it's Easter Sunday in the sunrise service." "Okay. Can somebody pick me up? Because my parents aren't going to get up that early." You know? And so I went to a sunrise service and to hear her sing. And boy, life changed forever. Invitations come in a lot of ways. Jesus said, "Come to me." And then he said, at the end of his life, after being born in Bethlehem, the house of bread, after proclaiming in the messages, in that spiritual sense, I am the bread of life, and he who partakes of me will live. At the end of his life, as he sat down with just the 12 guys who had hung in there with him for the whole time, he took bread, and he broke it, and he said, this is my body which is broken for you. Trying to tell them what was going to happen. That he was going to be killed that very next day. He took a cup of wine during the Passover meal and said, this is the new covenant in my blood, which is shed for you. Again, telling them, I'm going to die. He tried to tell them a number of times, they just couldn't get it. And then he was arrested and killed, rose again to give us life. Why do we come here? To remember. To remember. Nothing worse than being forgotten. Nothing worse than having your birthday come, not getting one card, not anybody calling to say happy birthday, no one even aware of your existence. We don't like to do that to each other. Jesus, in the greatest act of sacrifice, sacrificing his life for us, wanted us to remember. So what did he do?
Something pretty strange.